Intervju Radija Študent.
Dobar dan, drage poslušalke in dragi poslušalci, na frekvenci 89,3 MHz. Petkovo popovdne dogaja se festival Ment. Danes smo tretji dan. Pejte si poslušat, pejte si pogledat. Lep izbor glasbenikov in glasbenic. Danes večer v centru Ljubljane. Ja, mogoče, če boste hitri, lahko ujamete še kakšno konferenco, ki so bile dopoldne. Ampak ja, no, zvečer se bo dogajal. Skratka, v sklopu festivala Ment poteka tudi tale intervju z Derekom Walmsleyem, ki pa je urednik in glasbeni novinar. Urednikuje revijo The Wire, neka že kultna revija. Preden pa se je pridružil ekipi revije, je pisal svoj avtorski blog, ki je bil naslovljen Pop Life. Namenjen je bil predvsem grime glasbi, in Derek je bil tudi klaviaturist zasedbe South Hall Riot. And now I'm going to switch to English, so my interviewee will better understand me. Hi, Derek. Welcome to Ljubljana.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. A bit nervous, but it's how it be. So, yeah. I don't know, let's just start with the interview conversation. Let's start at the beginning. I would like to know, what is the origin of your music enthusiasm? Like, what is the so-called genesis of your career?
So lots of things. Like, when I was growing up, I was interested in lots of different types of music, but the thing which kind of like sort of radicalized me with music was first computers and making music on like Amiga computers and making and using samplers on these computers. I was fascinated by music technology and making music and trying to make sort of dance music in the kind of house era and later the kind of rave era. And that just sucked me into rave music, really. I was born in Reading, which is a small town outside London, but the town is close enough so that you could listen to the radio stations coming from London, and I could listen to really exciting music coming from London, particularly Kiss FM, which was really big for drum and bass from 1994 onwards. Really, really exciting music, and I used to stay awake late at night, you know, after going out to see my friends or something, and listen to the radio on Friday and Saturday night, or, you know, after hanging with my friends. And this amazing music was coming out, and really radical dance music, but so crazy radical and with these amazing ideas in it. And that's what kind of sucked me into weird music, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then you just started to collect different artists and put them on your blog.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess so. I moved to London in the late 90s.
In 97, right?
Yeah, I think so. I sometimes forget myself, but I moved to London because the pirate radio scene was still really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to try and listen to some jungle, but when I got there, there was much more garage music, UK garage music, and that carried on through grime. At this kind of time, I'd started like working for a chain of record shops and stuff, so I was like around lots of music all the time. And when grime started, it was all in the area in London that I was around, and so that was a really exciting time. And I just started blogging about that because it was, lots of blogs were talking about it, but it was not really anywhere in the music press. And I was like, wow, this is really exciting do-it-yourself music made by people from my community. Really, really radical sounds and grassroots production. So that, sucks me into grime. And I thought, well, you know, it'd be nice to write about grime, because not many people are writing about grime.
Yeah, definitely. And what would you consider a pivotal moment which made you like realize that you're in the middle of a birth of a new scene and then decide to start a blog? Like, what was that moment, if there is that moment precise?
Yeah, that's like a really good question. Probably something like the MC and producer Wiley, who mm-hmm. was really influential in starting grime, and, you know, has done some really bad things recently in terms of racism and stuff. At that time, he was a real innovator, and I just noticed the way that he did so much production, but also he was starting to MC as well. And so you had this scene, or this guy, which was almost just like a polymath, or someone who is a complete autodidact. They had all, they did everything themselves. They produced, mm-hmm. they rapped, they did everything, and did radio shows and practiced their rhymes on the radio shows. You could hear their rhymes getting better and better each radio mm-hmm. show. So I could hear this music developing. It was like, it's almost like you're in the room with this guy creating this innovation. That mm-hmm. was cool.
Oh, yeah, I get it. But was it a very close and tight-knit community, like the grime and garage scene? And also your audience on your blog, like, did you know actually people who read, or have you seen like an influx of readers from other countries as well?
Yeah, like a lot of the people who did blogs, we would all kind of email each other now and again and meet up, and some of those people are still like good friends now.
Mm-hmm.
And so most, to start with, we just knew each other virtually, but after a while some of us knew each other in real life and stuff like that. And this would be around the time that, like, Mark Fisher, K-Punk, was blogging as
yes.
well. So he was one of the guys who was in that circle, and, you know, some of us would sometimes like hang out and have these kind of blog meetups. So there was like a social scene mm-hmm. around it too. Like the grime actual artists, almost kind of in another place or mode of kind of working. Like none of them really did blogs or anything like that.
Yeah.
They were too busy doing pirate radio and doing their own music and stuff like that. So kind of they were not part of the kind of blog scene, but we just occasionally kind of cross paths with them, and, you know, if we wanted to cover some style of their music. Actually, you know, the way you kind of run into the grime artists would usually be, because I didn't actually go and visit any pirate radio stations at the time,
mm-hmm.
but you would see them sometimes at shows at mm-hmm. kind of the ICA or art galleries sometimes, and, you know, at the end of their shows they would hand out CDRs and you would have a little chat like that. It was really exciting because it was all, none of it was really part of the music industry.
Yes, I mean
they were selling records selling vinyl records
yeah.
in record shops, but it wasn't part of the kind of music business.
Yeah, it was very organic,
yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Now a bit of a personal question. What was your favorite producer, grime producer at the time, and if it's still the same?
Let me have a think.
I know it's a hard question.
Some people I really liked. I really liked Scratchy, rather,
uh-huh.
from Roll Deep.
Okay.
Who's an MC who worked a lot with Trim. And I think he did some cool and interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really liked Newham Generals with
mm-hmm.
DEE and Footsie. I think Footsie did most of the production for them. Yeah, actually, I'd probably have to go... maybe even Footsie would be one of the most exciting.
Footsie's great.
Yeah, I still can hear some of the kind of weird beats in my head and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they kind of stay in my mind 15 years on.
Yeah, definitely. Now, onto The Wire, which is now globally known, very recognized, and also a cult magazine of sorts. The Wire has lived through several decades, but kept its original format, which is black and white printed magazine. How did The Wire keep keep its cutting edge, in your opinion?
I started the Wire in 2007, so I wasn't part of the organisation, and I'm sort of lucky that I just mm-hmm. get to deal with the words. I don't have to think about the kind of financial organisation or kind of people who are much cleverer than me to do that. My bosses, Tony and Chris, look after the company. Like, in terms of how we kept our edge, I mean, we're really hardcore music fans and music listeners. And when I went to The Wire, that was one of the first times in my life I kind of found people who maybe had something of a similar experience. They just seemed to listen deeply and care about the music in a really serious way. Hardcore listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of just is all down to that, really. We put music in the magazine that we're excited by and we think is interesting and doing something different. And whenever, you know, we could probably try and sell out and become more commercial, I suppose mm-hmm. that may be a possible option, but most of the time when we're talking about artists who are more commercial, none of us feel it. None of us feel it in our stomachs and in our backbones, that excitement, that kind of buzz you get of covering something new. And it's a kind of, that's a really simple answer, but it's like, you know, we just cover stuff which we think excites us. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you joined The Wire in 2007?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And how did that happen?
It happened in a kind of weird way, okay. Which is I was writing for The Wire as a freelance writer from 2004. And I was actually, you know, I mean, I come from kind of internet kind of culture, really. And one of the ways I was, like, hanging out with people with music and connecting with music was through, like, internet forums. And actually, it was in a football internet forum that I started chatting with some music journalists who I knew a bit, particularly, like, music journalists who used to be in the Melody Maker in the 90s, who mm-hmm. I used to read that paper very closely, like David Stubbs and Simon Price and Taylor Parks. And David Stubbs was then working for The Wire, and I think he just saw my writing on this internet forum and was like, OK, do you want to try and do some reviews? That's where it all started, really.
Great. That's cool. So nowadays, you've mentioned before, in the age of 10-second TikToks, what makes people still pick up and read, you know, 5-page features?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think I know. What do you think? Do you read it in print?
Yeah, I think it's the enthusiasm. Uh-huh. You know, when somebody cares about a certain artist, genre, music scene so deeply, they just want to, you know, suck it in and read it. And, you know, it transcends the mindless scrolling and everything. Like, it transcends that. You just want to sit down and read and really immerse yourself.
That's our mission, to kind of transcend mindless scrolling. I mean, there's lots of kind of good music coverage out there.
Mm-hmm.
What I can maybe say about us, and this is, yeah, I can say this from my heart, is that, you know, every word which goes in The Wire, we, you know, look at it several times, and we really try and check, you know, okay, does this argument make sense? Are these facts correct? Is this article answering all the questions which I want as a reader to have answered? You know, we put this stuff into print, and that's like, we obviously pay money to have it into print, and we really care about trying to have it as truthful as it can kind of possibly be, or to be as constructive a way of talking about the music as possible. I mean, music journalism is kind of mad, because music is a weird thing.
Yeah, but definitely.
I think a lot of the good skills of music journalism are just the very good journalistic skills of saying what something is and why, what it's trying to do and how and who are the people doing it. And that kind of journalism is something that we all really, really care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, relating to that, what's your opinion with between, you know, there was in the mid-2000s, there was like an obvious dichotomy between, you know, amateur internet music reviewers and then a professional one who wrote for, you know, physical mediums or worked at radio. And nowadays, this line between, you know, amateur enthusiastic music reviewer and a professional one is blurring. And I would like to know, how do you personally look at the rise of this new internet music reviewers, such as, for example, Anthony Fantano? Do you see them as a logical step in the evolution of music journalism, or do you consider them an equal to a physical format, or do you maybe even see them as a threat?
Well, kind of a lot of this stuff doesn't feel so new to me, really. I mean, I came up in the kind of mid-2000s writing on blogs, and maybe at that time it felt like there was a bit of a contrast or a bit of a disagreement between writing on a blog where you're writing much more freeform and writing in a music magazine where maybe you have to be much more accurate, maybe. So a lot of those battles feel like quite, just to me, they feel like quite kind of old battles. Mm. And I think lots of great writers have come up through doing blogs and really contributed to music journalism. It, in some ways, it feels a little bit like talking about vinyl versus CD, kind of sometimes boring debate. And it feels like, in some ways, it feels like a debate in the past. I mean, also, since the mid-2000s, there's been other times when music blogs really seem to become very active and exciting. I mean, there was a time in the kind of like 2010 where around the kind of music which The Wire discussed as being called something called hypnagogic pop, the kind of psychedelic pop, which psychedelic pop, which kind of was cut up in various kind of ways and used nostalgia in an interesting way. And lots of great blogs around that time, and a lot of those bloggers have gone into music writing. So maybe I just don't see it as so much of a battle anymore.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, in mid-2000s you had those blogs, and now those blogs just moved to social media. Like, they just got to centralized platforms.
That's probably true as well.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of people who get into journalism through through social media or through, yeah, maybe blogging in some sense still too. So I think, you know, magazines...
That's how I did.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Is your blog in English or Slovene?
Actually, I went into music through Rate Your Music site. But I was reading blogs that were publishing emo core and screamo demos, and that's what, you know, really got me in.
Cool.
So yeah, that's how I did it. But yeah, if we go back to The Wire, how do you build your audience and engage with it? Like, have you see the style of writing and article formation or even graphic design change to suit, you know, nowadays attention deficit reader, I guess, if I can call it like that,
Well, sometimes the answers to these things are kind of quite boring and simple, which is we build our audience just by trying to be serious with our readers and treat the music as seriously as we think it needs to be treated, and as serious as the musicians. And like, if we do that, we find we seem to create a hardcore of readers who know what we do and think it matters. And as long as we have enough readers across the world who are serious about their music and think it's worth covering in a proper way, then that kind of is our audience. I could probably say that, you know, most of our editorial meetings and stuff like that, they're not kind of complex. We don't look at Spotify statistics or social media figures. That really doesn't happen. It really is just a group of six or seven or eight of us sitting in a room thinking about, okay, what feels fresh?
Yeah.
So that's the only way our audience builds.
Yeah, definitely. Also, is there an influx of younger audience? Have you noticed it or not really?
Yeah, kind of always, I think. And it kind of comes in waves.
Yeah. Is it correlated with the features of younger artists?
I wouldn't say it's as simple as that.
Mm.
One thing I've noticed in London, at least, is that I think younger artists who are involved in DIY and underground music, they really are interested in approaches to music making which are in some ways quite avant-garde or experimental. That, you know, I think most young musicians in our kind of scene are maybe interested in improvisation. They might be interested in kind of chance and luck, and they're interested to play with lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I find lots of these methods of making music, which before used to be maybe quite radical or quite marginal or, you know, not popular, now loads of DIY musicians, they want to be able to improvise. They're happy to play with anyone. You know, all of us probably, like, in this age, are happy using technology in some way. So most musicians who, if they write songs, they use technology as well in some way. So these practices of improvisation and technology and editing and composition and stuff like that, everyone, including kind of young musicians, do all these things.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe one of the things which sucks them into the wire. They're like, okay,
definitely,
I can see people are doing adventurous ways of making music. I want to be a part of that. So, yeah, we definitely get a lot of... I definitely see a lot of young readers who are interested in the history and the scene they're part of in the UK.
Yes, okay. And also in the last few years, The Wire very noticeably shifted their away from, you know, Anglo-speaking world and their music, and focused more on and gave more space to artists from other parts of the world. And yeah, there's also very noticeable influx of new scenes, of new music genres.
Which ones did you notice which were like, oh, that's new? Which ones made you think that's new?
That is also Anglo-speaking world. There is a big wave of post-punk right now, but there is also a lot of music coming from Africa, like very experimental techno music and electronic music coming from Africa. Also, the Eastern Europe has a really cool scene, alternative scene. And I would like to know, how do you curate, how do you navigate between all of those new and exciting new scenes and sounds?
Yeah, there's like lots of different ways to answer that, and hopefully not too long waves. I mean, in some ways that was actually always the thing which excited me about The Wire as a reader. Like in the 90s, I used to read The Melody Maker, and that was really Anglo and American centric. It was writing about really exciting music, but that really looked down on music from Europe, which seemed very, very, very stupid and just very, yeah, quite, yeah, very kind of bigoted to me. So when I discovered The Wire, we were doing big pieces on like Merzbau from Japan, Einstezende Neubauten from
Germany.
So like really interesting, a whole world of music. So that's actually something which was interesting to me about The Wire in the first place. And now, you know, my colleague Chris Bond, he was really, really closely connected with Liebach in Ljubljana as well, still is. So how do we navigate that stuff now? We do, you know, we do try and always represent a kind of real diversity of music, and that's not just diversity of, you know, people or ages or genders, although it is all those things too, but it's also, you know, diversity of music making practices and stuff like that. We just always try and keep a mix. Never to try and settle into a pattern, I think, is something we do. So, you know, we might have a techno artist from, I don't know, Berlin on one, you know, issue, but then next issue we might have a, you know, indigenous Canadian singer from Canada.
Yeah.
And so to just try and keep it, like, very varied. It also helps that we get, you know, news from around the world and contacts from around the world who introduce us to really weird and interesting things. We did like an issue on radio actually about 1 year ago, and that was really cool in like being able to talk to people in, you know, South America about experimental music in South America, for instance. And so that introduced us to lots of kind of things which I think other people maybe don't know about as I mean, sure, lots of people know about them, but mainstream or just boring media doesn't know about these kind of things.
Yes, definitely. And this is another question of more personal nature. Do you ever get overwhelmed with the amount of music that exists out there? It's a very standard question for each music enthusiast, but yeah.
Well, lots of kind of, like, writers or sometimes complain about music being overwhelming, but I just think they sound kind of like old, kind of old, out of touch people who, you know, if you're 16 growing up now, I think you would consume lots of different music from lots of different places. I don't think you would view that as a problem. So a lot of kind of old school music journalists complain about music being overwhelming. I find it pretty boring angle. But do I feel overwhelmed? I probably do.
Yeah.
Sometime when you can kind of go onto Bandcamp and just follow artist to artist, collaboration country to country. Yeah, but, oh man, who wouldn't want to be overwhelmed by music?
Exactly.
That's why I'm in it, to
exactly.
be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But yes, yes, fine.
It gets tiresome sometimes, but it's definitely worth it. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes I tend to get burnout from listening to music. Like, I don't get, you know, the tingles when you enjoy it.
Yeah, sure.
When you enjoy music, I don't get them. And then I just need to take a break, maybe listen to artists I listened when I was a kid, and then come back, and usually, you know, it resets.
Yeah, so, I get that, or maybe listen to nature for a bit.
Exactly, yeah. Another more provocative question. Are you of opinion that there is a lot of pretentiousness in music journalism?
Probably. So to be pretentious, to pretend you have knowledge that you don't really have, I think there probably is quite a lot of that, but there's that in every area of life.
Definitely.
I mean, we try and keep things simple where possible, and like really in music journalism, answering these really direct questions of like, why why is someone doing music like this and what tools and approaches do they use? And usually if you stick to that, then it's good. And you have a little 20% on top, which is maybe more kind of almost like speculative writing or kind of imaginative or subjective writing.
Yeah.
And then it's not so pretentious. But yeah, I'm sure you do get quite a lot of pretentious stuff. Maybe, I mean, to kind of look at it another way, I mean, there is a lot of music which is quite conceptually orientated now. So people might do a project which uses field recordings and collage or something like that. And they're using that to tell a story or unpack a concept of, let's say, an interesting geographical area, interesting social relations or some biographical detail. And so I think because people are doing quite a lot of concept-driven stuff now, that does invite people to write about it in a conceptual way. And that probably does cause some pretentious stuff. But I welcome that music. I think it's fresh and exciting. And, yeah, you just have to try and make sure the music journalists writing about it are not dicks, basically.
Yeah, totally. And to listen to what artist has to convey, like to listen to what the artist wants to convey through music, and you know, not make up your own concepts and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely. But do you ever catch yourself being too critical towards a musician or a group and then later change your mind?
That's a really good question. Yeah, sometimes. And I probably did that more back in the day. I was talking to someone yesterday, which I thought was kind of interesting conversation, and, you know, I definitely try and, when I'm writing about music now, I definitely try and find, what I think the artist is trying to do and what's valuable for them in it. You know, I try and unpack what I think, even if the music doesn't blow me away straight away, I try and have a sense of like the kind of social worth of it or what issues someone is trying to resolve in their work. Because you never know, that means, you know, in 2, 5, 6 years time, that music then might become incredible music. If it's dealing with interesting questions, usually it will start to become interesting music. So I try and think about what kind of questions they're trying to answer these days, and that kind of helps. But yeah, I definitely have reviewed stuff where later I've thought there was more worth in something than I thought. But I can't actually come to mind of too many at the moment, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, at the end, it's all part of the process. You also grow as a person, and so do the artists, and so does the music. The music grows on you, so yeah, it happens. Yeah, which brings us to the MENT Festival. Is it your first time at MENT?
Yeah, I've never been to Ljubljana before, and so yeah, it's been good. It's kind of good to see quite an ambitious festival in terms of number of artists it's putting on in, like, beautiful city. And like some of the stuff I've seen has been really good. There's been some other stuff I didn't like as much, but some of the high points have been really great.
Really great, yeah. But do you think Ljubljana, as a smaller town, fits just right as a hosting city of, you know, showcase festival for the smaller artists?
Yeah, well, showcase festivals is kind of, it makes it sound kind of quite a commercial kind of operation. It's kind of not a term which is like really that lovable kind of showcase festival.
Fair.
But like I do really like festivals where you're able to go from one venue to another really easily, and so your music experience, you're able to go from one music experience to another quite quickly. Mm. It's not really possible in London, actually, but like in the kind of Metal Cover area, you have no problem going from one venue to another, and they are really close. And
yeah, totally.
There was, like, small cities can work really well for that. There used to be a great festival in the Netherlands city of Tilburg called mm-hmm. Incubate, mm-hmm. and that was so successful as a festival person, I think, because you could just go from one venue to another, next door to each other sometimes, and that was a really cool, amazing experience. So yeah, I mean, in terms of like seeing lots of bands and being able to compare lots of bands and have, you know, fast changing musical experiences, a city like Ljubljana feels pretty cool to me. Yeah,
it does, right? And what's the biggest difference you've noticed between Slovenian public and UK one? If there is.
I think Slovenian public, Slovenian gig audiences smoke a lot more. So I was like surprised by that. I was like standing outside chatting to my kind of colleagues and stuff, and there was so many people smoking, and that's kind of really much more unusual in the UK now. It's kind of dying out in the UK, so I noticed that because I wake up in the morning and I can still smell smoke on my jeans and stuff like that. In terms of like more serious kind of response, it's hard to know, actually. I think both Slovenian gig audiences seem pretty serious. They want to hear the music and make up their own opinion. But it feels to me kind of the same. It feels like proper audiences who take the music seriously. So I couldn't really say much more than that. You know, that you can't ask for that much more than that, I don't think.
Yeah. I think personally, the biggest difference would be that people really know each other here.
Yeah.
You go to a concert and meet, you know, 10 of your friends or something like that.
Yeah, I can see that totally. Yeah.
On to the last question. What can we expect from The Wire in the upcoming months? If you can spoil it.
More kind of unusual and adventurous and crazy and hardcore music. We have some interesting things planned. We have a feature on some kind of underground music from former Eastern Bloc countries that's kind of planned. That's a band from Lithuania who sound really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They're from back in the day. They're from the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
So there's a bit of that. There's some other interesting subjects we've got planned. Like there's a feature we're kind of planning on devotional roots reggae and
mm-hmm.
Nyabingi music, which you could argue is like the roots of roots reggae, if that kind of makes sense. So there's a feature on that we have planned, which should be really exciting too. And I've been listening to this guy called Anthony Moore, who used to be in Slap Happy and did some stuff with Pink Floyd actually as well. And did experimental film soundtracks as well.
Uh-huh.
And so the range of his music is really incredible. And sort of getting deep into his music has been amazing to me over the last few days. So hopefully we'll be able to do something on that. So, yeah, I don't know. As usual, a big range of stuff.
Yeah, lots of exciting stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Something for everyone. Something from every angle.
Yeah, nice.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Derek, thank you for your time. Very happy to have this opportunity to interview you. I will switch back to Slovene to do the outro. Torej, to je bil Derek Wamsley, urednik in glasbeni novinar. Trenutno urednikuje revijo The Wire. Naročite se na njo. Pejte na ment, danes je zadnji dan, ene par cool glasbenikov in glasbenic bo na sceni, Metelkova, Kino Šiška, v Cankarjevem domu se bo tudi nekaj dogajalo, skratka pač po celi Ljubljani. Tako da ja, z vami sem bil Julijan Lavrič za Radio Študent, RŠ Intervju. Ajde, čau, lepo popovdne vam želim.
Intervju Radia Študent.